The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome to The Big Show. It is a great day to be here, except for the fact that I did not get to feel a single bit of that rumble that everybody seems to be talking about. And that, of course, brings us to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Big local.
Everybody's talking about the earthquake that took place that shook the Pacific Northwest. But if you're like me, I slept through the whole thing. Didn't feel a thing. Didn't feel a tremor. Didn't notice anything. But of course, if you lived out toward Monroe, where the epicenter was, maybe you felt a bit more.
Slept through the whole thing?
Well, I mean,
can't believe that.
What time did it start? I mean,
3 a.m.?
Yeah. I mean,
who's not awake at 3 a.m.,
right? Yeah, I want to know who it was that was... The people I saw commenting were people saying things like, I was binging on Hannah, the new Amazon original programming.
It's not really worth binging on.
I was binging on Hannah, and I felt this big shake. Rob Furman of the Snoqualmie Ridge area felt it.
The windows were shaking, door was shaking, whole house was moving around. With everything that's going on in California, definitely my mind chucked that it was an earthquake, and it probably lasted about 10 seconds, 15 seconds. I mean, it was more than just a little movement.
That's from Cairo 7 Television. It's a reminder because we were just talking about California the other day, the big quakes that were happening there, what would happen here. We just did a story about the number of schools in Washington State. I want to say it was about 330 of the schools that are not ready for any earthquake activity or any major earthquake activity. They haven't been retrofit to be safe in those circumstances. So it does bring up this question of, you know, how safe are we, and when's the Seattle big one coming? And by the way, we'll be talking with a seismologist coming up later on in the show about what the odds are for Washington State and this specific area. There's a story I was reading earlier today that was basically what would happen if we got a 9, you know, 4.6 versus a 9. It goes in kind of an exponential increase. So, you know, if you thought the house was shaking at 4.6, a 9 is such that you wouldn't even be able to stand. It would be shaking that much. But the story I read said there'd be a tsunami, there'd be a big wave. The wave would be coming in at 40 miles an hour. It would depend on the tides and depend on where you're located. But the wave could go deep into the Puget Sound. But it didn't tell you the rest. Like, how far up the hill should I be? How far away from the Puget Sound would I want to go in that circumstance based on where I was? You know, like, I assume it's different in Bellingham for versus Marysville versus, you know, or Tulalip versus Seattle and Tacoma and Olympia. So, you know, I would just like to know some greater details there. And then when they say that the west side, west of I-5 in the Seattle area would liquefy in the case of a major earthquake, I still want to know what that means. Like, I know the ground becomes, you know, the equivalent of liquid, but, you know, is that like I can put a solid into water and it just sinks right away, but is this more like a mud that big flat things would still stay up, or, you know, are we all going to be like Lois Lane in the Superman movie? So those are the questions inquiring questions that I want to know. One individual, a Monroe woman near the epicenter, was awoken by the quake.
Woke up at 3, and I thought my son was having a seizure because he's had seizures in the past, or something ran into the house. And then my son ran into my arm room. He's like, did you feel that? And I'm like, yeah, it was an earthquake.
That actually reminded me a bit of when Mount St. Helens blew up. My mom came out, I remember, and yelled at me because she said, you know, stop banging on the garage door. She thought I had a hammer. I was banging on the garage door. And I said, I swear I didn't do it. Didn't do anything. It was just a loud explosion out here. Then we ran in the house and tuned in on the radio.
Earthquakes are definitely a looming thing over our heads, you know. Like, and yeah, it's almost nervous. It might be the pre-shock for a big one, you know what I mean? Hopefully not, you know. But yeah, definitely we have that here. You know, we don't have tornadoes or hurricanes, but we have earthquakes.
That's an Everett man speaking to Cairo 7 Television. Although, you know, we say that it's looming over us, and I acknowledge it. I'll point out the big one, but I don't think that it really looms large in our consciousness. I think it's one of those things where when we have a rumble, we all talk about it. When something big happens, we talk about it. But for the most part, earthquakes, it's not like Los Angeles where you feel these tremors every so often and you got the San Andreas Fault, you know, an actual ditch basically that you're looking at that reminds you all the time that we've got, you know, big plate action going. Here, it just seems to be one of those things that we acknowledge, but it's kind of like a trivia thing. It's like we acknowledge there's been Bigfoot sightings in Washington State, but we're not all that worried about encountering the creature if we go into if we go camping. It's just one of those things. It's almost like a fiction until it actually happens.
I think about it every time I drive over the Ship Canal Bridge. And every time I'm stuck in traffic under an overpass, I definitely think about it.
I also think of bridge functionality, like when they say that there's a certain number of bridges, you know, are structurally deficient. I think about that phrase of our state report every time I drive over one of those. But that's different. That's just kind of the fear of heights and fear of being, you know, trapped underwater in your car or something. But as soon as you're done, does it stick with you? Are you still thinking of earthquakes? Well, of course, Jennings is also not the typical audience. You know, I mean, she's a newsy person. So I think most people, you know, they're going over the bridge, they get nervous about the bridge, and then right after that, they're back to singing along with whatever tune is playing in the car. Here's the Cairo 7 television meteorologist, Morgan Palmer.
Here's some really important information. A lot of folks have been wondering, okay, what does this mean? Are we going to have a larger quake? Well, a relatively shallow earthquake. It was felt as a jolt, but it was felt over a pretty wide area. The aftershocks will decay. That means they'll get fewer and fewer over time. They're likely to be minimal in the ones and twos. Hopefully, we don't even have a three. Stronger earthquake, usually that's about a 5% chance, about a 1 in 20 chance. And it's greatest right after the initial earthquake, and it tails off. It doesn't go in a line like 5 days later, we'll have still a 5% chance of a larger earthquake, meaning this one was a foreshock, but it decays over time. So the greatest chance is right now. A better chance was an hour ago, so likely from this quake, we're not going to see that. Now, doesn't mean it can't happen, but a lot of folks have been asking because of what happened in California.
I always thought that was the most interesting thing, that that the odds of the major aftershock decrease with time, because you'd think, you know, the next day or the day after or something like that, that, you know, you'd still be at this great risk, but it's actually just getting less and less and less as time goes by. Which is key, because if you're watching the movies, usually, you know, they're waiting for a while and it becomes more dramatic and they say that it's coming. And, you know, just like so many people learn their history from the movies, they're also learning their science from the movies, which is always a danger.
The Big Lead. Your tax dollars at work.
Drivers are complaining about the new I-5 ramp meters in Pierce County. And this is Tacoma and Fife. Why are they complaining? Well, because these meters that are designed to make traffic flow more smoothly and get traffic moving again, they're not doing the job.
You know, we've heard from drivers complaining on Twitter to Tracy and to us, saying their wait times sometimes were 20 minutes up to an hour to get onto the highway. Now, these northbound on-ramps were turned on at 54th and 5, 28th and near the Emerald Queen Casino and right here at the Port of Tacoma Road. It's not on just yet. It'll go on at 6 o'clock this morning. But WashDOT says this spaces out cars, making for better transitions on the highway and eases congestion. But instead, what we've heard from folks is them stuck for long periods of time and mile-long backups. There's no word yet on when this will ease up.
That was Cairo 7's Cairo 7 Television's Rob Munoz. And look, the other day I was in Fife and I thought, is there road construction going on? What is the delay? What's going on? Now I know. Now I know what I was caught in. Fife is always horrible. I don't know why, but it seems more horrible lately. Now I know why. And it's a weird phenomenon because, you know, Fife is flat. You can see forever. You know, there's no reason why other than drivers have this refusal. I almost went and bought a dash cam after work yesterday because on my way home, I turned on my signal. I look over. I see a guy. He speeds up. And you can see he saw me and he kind of tossed his chin back like he was very proud of his ability to block me from being able to get over. And I just thought, how small are you? You know, and I wanted to start a website of peoplewhocan'tdrive.com for Washington State or something so that we could just put up a hall of shame of people who make it impossible for us to be able to use turn signals here on the highway because they won't let you over. And they don't understand the zipper effect where you just, all you do is you let the car in front of you in, you make enough space for that. As people are trying to merge, you know that they've got to get on the freeway eventually, right? You know, so rather than back everything up, you just take turns, let people in. I do it all the time, and they don't. And you got the semi-truck drivers that are super frustrated because they're driving these huge things. I would think that you would have enough respect for what the stresses that they're going through, moving in and out of traffic – that you'd want to give them a chance to get over. I'm not saying it's fun to drive behind them, but I frequently will give enough space. I'll flash my lights a little bit so they know, hey, you're in the clear. You can get over now. And, you know, and then I get the nice courtesy wave, which, by the way, should be taught in driver's ed. Everybody give the courtesy wave. When somebody does something solid for you in traffic, you give that little courtesy wave. Or if you cut over and you feel like, well, I was a little close, you know, for that person, or they just weren't quite paying attention and then you were able to get over, but you know that they didn't want you to, you can still give the courtesy wave and it cuts back on the whole, how dare that person get in front of me kind of thing. So
I don't know. When people do that to me, I feel like they're trying to get out of me being mad at them. Like, oh, I gave you a wave, so it's all right now.
Yeah, that is part of the point. But does it make you madder? Most people, it doesn't.
No. It's. Yeah. I mean, it's better than a middle finger.
Exactly. So, you know, give the courtesy wave. So, and when you don't get the courtesy wave, you look at that person like, what's wrong with you? Traffic's lodged. Nobody's letting you in. I did it. And now you treat me the same as the rest of them. So, you know, give that courtesy wave. Not necessarily to WSDOT based on these ramp meters, because at some point when WSDOT tweets out that they're going to improve the flow of traffic and provide a more reliable trip commute time, and your reliable trip commute time just got bigger by 20 minutes to an hour, that should be an indicator that something's going awry. Something in the planning is missing. And if you're tweeting it out, but the experience is the opposite for the people that are actually in it, then it's one of those things where you might have to there's something that you missed in your initial calculation or your initial testing. Because at some point, the frustration of the people has got to count for something. And, you know, look, the five Tacoma areas had construction now for well over a decade. So at some point, you know, it'll end in theory. But, you know, the last thing people need in that area is to make that choke point even worse. Number one thing people could do, not the zipper or not the lights and the meter, but just think of a zipper. You're in the line, let somebody else in, the teeth of a zipper, so that if you give enough space, every other car, I'm not saying let five cars in front of you and hold everything up, but once people get the gist of that's what's happening, it's like the pass it on thing at Starbucks when somebody buys a cup of coffee. It goes on for a while because people think, yeah, that's working better. That's really nice. I love it. And that's plus.
The big lead, big local.
The Virgin Mary statue holding the baby Jesus at St. James Cathedral in Seattle has been vandalized. The Mary Shrine, beloved by parishioners, is now closed. Turns out somebody went in, smashed up baby Jesus' arms and also the face of the Virgin Mary. It's a 200-year-old statue. The man who did it is described as unstable. Couple of things here. One is that there's been numerous problems with homeless in Seattle, homeless in that neighborhood. I'm sure that the Catholic Church there would agree with me, even though it's always sad, I think, particularly when older works of art are vandalized in this way because they're hard to replace. In this case, they're going to be able to repair, but it's always painful, I think, to see works of art like that diminished. But based on what happened earlier in Seattle, if you have a choice between a deranged person going around the city stabbing people or the deranged person attacking a statue, I'll take the statue every time. Because at least that way they're not harming other individuals and they're aiming it at a place that is focused on forgiveness and grace. And that's a plus for them. But it does highlight again the failure of the city and the failure, because my guess is, you know, I'm just guessing wildly here, but I'm guessing that some of the problems that the church has had are due to drugs and narcotics and the ability for people to openly abuse these things and the mental states that people end up with after major abuses of these drugs. You know, it speaks to that failure and is a problem, but it also reminds us that there are people on the streets that can't take care of themselves, that are homeless, and that's a moral indictment because, you know, again, if people are incapable of caring for themselves and making proper decisions to care for their own life because of some kind of mental illness or mental inability, it's grotesque to have them just stuck living on the streets, subject to the violence of others and the violence of their own minds. That's a sad thing.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
Here's the bizarre part. Community leaders are terribly, terribly sorry. Here's the King County Sheriff.
That's my fault. I failed in making sure that we were protecting all the people at King County.
Very, very sad. King County Council member is ticked off.
The fact that it has been broken and hurt families in our community pisses me off.
Wow. And you know he's mad because he used that little P word there. That's Joe McDermott. Why are they so mad? What's so disappointing? ICE got access to private information from the jail database. And so for people who ended up in jail, ICE was able to get some information, even though the King County executive had made a big to-do about a law that was meaning that they weren't going to cooperate. Government officials in Washington State weren't going to cooperate with ICE and give this kind of information over. King County Executive Dow Constantine wrote, "For this breach of trust, I am truly sorry," he says. The sheriff, when we make a mistake, we own it. Ultimately, it's my responsibility. We had human error. It was unintended. The report recommends the county develop a privacy program and improve training and monitoring of their records, databases, and procedures, because ICE was able to get information that allowed them to use jail data to access inmate information, photos, physical descriptions, addresses, and aliases. I submit again, if we took a survey, even in liberal King County, of the information that people are worried about, if you asked them, look, do you want to cooperate with ICE or the government? I think a lot of people would say no. But if you said, should law enforcement cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement officials by giving them information from jail databases, I bet you the answer would be different. I mean, maybe it wouldn't get a majority, but I think it would. I think most people are not all that concerned about information from people that are visiting the King County jail system landing in the hands of ICE if it means people who are committing various crimes would end up gone. I mean, remember, statistically speaking, immigrants, both legal and illegal, commit fewer crimes than other people. So, you know, if you've got people in jail, usually that is not that controversial of a thing. If you can have ICE step in, take care of somebody who doesn't belong here, and they're here illegally, and they're committing crimes, it's, you know, to me, I put that at about zero on my concern meter. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.
Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. This is not Dory Monson. This is producer Nicole. Dory is on vacation, and so am I. Dave Bowes is filling in as a special treat. I've picked some of my favorite interviews from the last few months. So here we go. Dory Monson with Rain Wilson.
Hey, Rain. Good to talk to you. Appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
I'm always looking for common ground with my guests. So I thought I would let you know that I was the girls' basketball coach at Shorecrest High School for 8 years. So,
holy moly.
There is a common bond that we have right off the bat here. How about that?
Look at that. Go Highlanders.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And my wife is the college and career counselor at Shorecrest right now. So if she had encountered a 15, 16-year-old Rain Wilson at Shorecrest and advised you on what your life could and should be, what kind of advice would you have gotten?
That would have been a sad and sorry sight. I was at 15. I was skinny as a beanpole, pretty pimply, and very low self-esteem. And I was, for a while there, I played bassoon in the orchestra. I was in the Model United Nations. I was on the chess team and computer club all at the same time.
So you were
that gives you any sense.
You were one of the cool kids. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, I was really cool. I was a celebrated jock and homecoming king.
Yeah, yes.
And this was back in the days. This was back in the early 80s when you would get your butt kicked for being a nerd. You know, there were no cool nerds. You know, there weren't any billionaire nerds,
right,
or nerd rock stars. You were just you were lowest rung on the totem pole.
So how do you make the transition from that? Because I've heard you say that you played Dungeons and Dragons, not just every night, but pretty much every second of the weekend. Is that right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So how do you go from that? Because, you know, breaking into showbiz and people are saying no all the time early on, and that can be kind of self-esteem sucking. So how do you do you go from that kind of kid to somebody who has, you know, scaled the mountains now in your biz?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and it really is. It has to do with just I fell in love with acting. And so I took this sharp turn from being just a general all-around nerd to being just a drama nerd.
Yeah.
And I really fell in love with acting. I fell in love with the art of acting. I fell in love with the art of the theater. And I wanted to study it, and I wanted to do it more than anything in the world. So when you have – when that passion gets ignited, that will carry you a long way. So that was sparked – in my heart and in my gut, and I just wanted to be an actor more than anything. I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to be a part of making art and theater and storytelling. And so, yeah, there's been so much rejection along the way and so many hard times from that, but also really great times. And I'm really lucky that I get to make a career as an actor.
And did that spark come from within, or did somebody help ignite it?
Well, and this is, and I'm glad you're bringing that up because, you know, we're having this event on May 30th at the Paramount Theater in Seattle. That's a benefit for the Mona Foundation, and the Mona Foundation supports educational initiatives all around the world. It's a nonprofit, and this is a fundraiser for Mona. And for me, it was my education that helped. Give me that spark and that inspiration. I was really lucky to have some great teachers at Shorecrest, at the University of Washington, at other schools I attended, at NYU in New York. But the, the teachers that believed in me and the doors that were opened because of my education really helped pave the way for me to be an actor. And that's why I love the Mona Foundation. I really believe in education. And for a billion people on this planet, they don't have access to a quality education. And if we want to make the world a better place, helping in education, putting our focus in education is the key.
Yeah. And, you know, all three of our daughters graduated from Shorecrest. And I remember when they were little girls, we'd go up to the theater productions because they were very, very high quality for a high school. So I can understand how that could get in your soul if you get a taste of that at a really young age.
Yeah, and I was fortunate because my parents supported me in being an artist, and they weren't the kind of parents that are like, oh, you need to get your accounting degree so you have something practical. They really wanted me to explore what I loved, so I was really fortunate to have that as well.
Then you, of course, after all those early struggles, you hit it huge in The Office. And I'll tell you, you know, for my generation, I grew up and I watched every episode of MASH 20, 30 times. Seinfeld, the same thing. Now I know for my daughters, it's The Office. And I'm amazed that you're able to, when you had such a finely crafted character in Dwight Schrute, is it hard to escape that character as you want to do so many other things in your life from here on out?
No, it's, you know, I get asked that question a lot. Like, listen, you know, Dwight Schrute opened so many doors for me. Being on The Office, it gave me so many possibilities. I was able to do feature films and star in them. I was able to buy a house. You know, I had a lot of great travels and adventures. I'm so super grateful to be a part of that show. It's a great show. It's got a great legacy. Kids are listening to it and watching it more and more over the years because it's on Netflix now and they're binge watching it. And I'm thrilled, and I will always be super grateful for the role of Dwight. But listen, you know, I was acting professionally for 14 years, 15 years before I did Dwight. And I'll be acting for another, you know, 20 or 30 years now after Dwight. And I'm going to play a lot of different roles, and I'm lucky that I still have those doors open to me. Of course, I'm always going to be known as Dwight first and foremost.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Have you figured out, because like I said, Seinfeld's kind of in the same realm, what makes a show? Because it's still, The Office is still the most viewed show on Netflix. I mean, they're in a gigantic panic because they might lose the streaming rights in a couple of years. Have you figured out what takes a show from really good to the pantheon of the all-time greats?
You know, the only thing that I do know about a show that you want to come back to again and again is that show is about a family. And it's a family you want to hang out with. And so the great shows like The Office, like Friends, like Seinfeld, like Mash, they're a quirky, eclectic, lovable, flawed family that you care about them as characters and you want to hang out with them. And they keep having the same kind of dilemmas posed, and they keep kind of overcoming them in the same way and failing to overcome them in the same way. And that's what all great shows have in common.
Yeah, and there is some kismet involved, too, because it was just magical the way all those characters came together. It really was.
Yeah, we were lucky. We had the best writing staff.
Yeah.
We obviously had Steve Carell as our leader, and he's fantastic. So a lot of things came together in the right way.
And lots of stuff onward and upward for Rainn Wilson, including, like we said, this event coming up at the end of the month at the Paramount Theater, Rainn Wilson and His Neighborhood Friends. So what are people going to see when they come out to the Paramount?
Well, it's an evening to celebrate the Mona Foundation on its 20th anniversary. There's going to be entertainment and music and comedy and hijinks and some heartfelt and important discussions at the same time. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. It's entertainment. And it's also, and it's going to be great entertainment, and it's also for a great cause. So Joel McHale is going to be there. He was from the show Community. He's a stand-up comic, was on Talk Soup. He's another Seattle boy, went to University of Washington, was on Almost Live in Seattle for years. Very funny guy. He's going to do stand-up. We've got Michael Franti from Spearhead. He's a great artist. He's done kind of like a Bob Marley style singer. He does great stuff, really uplifting, fun music.
Nice.
Chris Ballew from Presidents of the United States of America is going to be performing, and some other great musical acts and guests as well. And people learn a lot about Mona Foundation and education along the way.
Very cool. You left out one key note on Joel McHale's resume, by the way. My former radio intern, you left that out.
Holy moly, no kidding.
Yeah, Joel's my intern. We were basketball teammates for 2 years in a little media league when we were both at King 5. Yeah, he's a pretty good friend of mine.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know that. I knew he was a Husky and a tight end on the Huskies.
Yes. Yes, he was. Yeah. He's a wonderful guy. So, okay, that's going to be a great event. Rainn, it's great talking with you. Appreciate you coming on with me today.
Thanks so much. I had a blast.
That was my recent conversation with actor Rainn Wilson. We got a lot more to do as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Labor Secretary Acosta is on his way out. He has given President Trump his resignation letter, and nobody cares other than to say good riddance to the guy. Conservatives were already mad at him before the Epstein stuff, and they weren't exactly thrilled by that either. And then the liberals wanted him out. And so he says, look, I can't be a distraction for you anymore. It's one of those classic letters where they say, you know what, I wanted to continue to serve you. We've been doing such marvelous work, but there's just too many distractions. I know that the media won't stop. So for you, I'm going to resign. And everyone pretends like it wasn't asked for. You know what I mean? It's I mean, I picture somebody saying, look, you know that expression, fall on your sword? Time for you to turn in that letter. You know, let's sharpen the blade, shall we? And you can go off and do whatever it was you were doing. I think he was a professor of law somewhere prior to this. So you can go off and do that again. But right now, you're a major political liability. And the conversation about Epstein isn't going to be about the Justice Department holding him responsible or about the Trump economy. It's just going to be about you as long as you're around. And so he's out. And the deal itself was pathetic. I've said that before. I mean, I am struck by the hypocrisy of some who, you know, they're saying they want him out. I think one person pointed to a Hollywood celebrity that was talking about how awful it was that that Acosta was around, and yet apparently they'd had some kind of engagement with Epstein after his arrest and conviction, you know, at one of his parties or something. And it just becomes absolutely pathetic. But then also, if you look at situations like Roman Polanski, famed Hollywood director that's been hiding out in Europe ever since the warrant was put out for him regarding the rape of a 13-year-old. You know, he's been there for decades. There's been various movements to try to forgive him because he's such a talented guy. And then you want to vomit because you think it doesn't matter if you're a talented guy. What matters is if you committed the crime or not. And so you've got, you know, the guy flees justice and you had all of Hollywood and other dignitaries applauding his other abilities and giving him a standing ovation at the Academy Awards not so long ago. You've had people in Congress like that representative from Oregon who finally had to resign after numerous accusations against him. That he had to resign because he tweeted out a picture of himself dressed as a tiger in the middle of the night. And he looked disturbed, shall we say. So, you know, as long as there was no visual there that could show up on TV and embarrass everybody, people seemed willing to set that aside and let him continue on. But as soon as he shows up as an adult male dressed as Tigger and waving on Twitter at night, suddenly people are saying, look, time for you to go. Why don't you get out of here? For the life of me, I don't understand why people put up with this stuff. And I don't understand those who excuse the bizarre behavior of the billionaire. I mean, I can't imagine how soulless employees who, if the allegations are true and the employees were engaged in the illegal activity and the rape of young women, how do you live with yourself? You know, what amount of money allows you to sleep at night? I don't know. David Bowes, in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.